Good morning. I'm Jan Verkrabel. I'm a retired faculty member from the College of Veterinary Medicine from the Department of Pathology and served as Associate Dean for Academic Programs for a number of years. I'm here this morning with Dr. George Eyster, kind of the founder of cardiology at CVM-MSU, and we're going to talk a little bit about the College of Veterinary Medicine and what has happened over the last 4 or 5 decades that both Dr. Eyster and I have had the privilege of sharing a part of. So with that, Dr. Eyster, share a little more of your background before we start the formal questioning.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here and hopefully add some insight into, or at least my view of what's happened here over the last almost 50 years.
George, you came to MSU from the University of Pennsylvania. What attracted you to academe and particularly to MSU?
I'll try to make a long story short, but as many of us who started out living on a farm, I was planning to be a large animal veterinarian. And after 2 years at the University of Pennsylvania, I had the opportunity and privilege to get in a program called COSTEP, Commissioned Officer Student Extern Training Program, for the summer at National Institutes of Health. And I got a different view of what veterinary medicine could be. There were, 75 medical students and five dental students and three veterinary students in the program. And the veterinary program was by far the best. We got really involved in things. I was working with people who were doing kidney transplants and cardiac surgery. And all of a sudden, my plans changed. I had a mentor then at the University of Pennsylvania, Jim Buchanan, who was an MSU graduate, and another mentor, Paul Berg, whose brother was an MSU veterinary graduate. And they both encouraged me to look at Michigan State after I graduated. My wife, a big city girl, was a little, she was never really attuned to going to live in a farming community, although we live on a farm now and you couldn't get her in the city if you tried, was so happy to when I decided I might be interested in academia. And I was fortunate enough to get a job here at Michigan State.
So how long have you been at Michigan State, Dr. Eyster?
Well, I 44 years on the faculty here. We started as we were called assistant instructors, which I don't even know if it exists anymore, but really was an intern, and I planned to be here for 2 years and then probably go somewhere south. Michigan State's kind of unique, and maybe we'll talk about that later. But I fell in love with the place, and I got opportunities that I don't think I could have gotten anywhere else, and it was never going to be leave after that.
So what was MSU like in 1964 when you arrived?
That was a different time. The college was what I would call your Midwest veterinary school, and that's not denigrating it, because Michigan State was one of the older and more respected veterinary schools in the country, but it was basically a large animal program, focused in towards large animal. It was relatively small. We worked out of one building, Giltner Hall, and all the medicine, I guess, in at Michigan State, or medical science, and all the veterinary program was out of that one building. It was some of the facilities were better than we had at the University of Pennsylvania, and then some of them were certainly inadequate. I arrived in 1964, and the new building was in the process of being constructed south of the Red Cedar River. It was by far the finest veterinary facility in the United States when completed in 1965. And we moved in on July 4th, 1965. Typical Midwest. We weren't going to waste a day, so it was a holiday, and we hauled all the animals and the working material over on that day. And we went from what I would call a relatively small, inadequate facility to, as I say, the finest facility probably in the world, but certainly in the United States for a veterinary hospital. The faculty in small animal consisted of the department chair. Actually, he was chair of all of the clinical departments, Wade Brinker, and Bob Shermer and Wally Keller and UV Mostowski, who was the radiologist. The rest of the small animal faculty was Sharon Tufts, Judy Martins, Brian Copeland, and myself, and a half-time graduate student, Ed Bicknell. So if Mostowski was large and small animal, and Brinker was a department chair and orthopedic surgeon, so essentially it was 8.5 people. Today it's well over 100. Brinker was the orthopedic surgeon, and Wade Brinker is, in my opinion, the finest orthopedic surgeon veterinary medicine has ever known. At the University of Pennsylvania, we deified our orthopedic surgeon, as they typically did, and I came out here, and the first day I walked into the surgery to watch Wade Brinker working, and I thought, he's working on a cadaver. There's no blood. I've never seen a surgeon that could be so precise and neat. And he was doing things that they told us couldn't be done. We established the first chair at Michigan State, and I think the second chair in veterinary medicine in the country in his name. And he was one of the five founders of the American College of Veterinary Surgeons. And Michigan State's orthopedics department is still a leader, if not the premier, orthopedic group in veterinary medicine today. Wally Keller did all the rest of the surgery, went on to become a leader in veterinary ophthalmology, and past dean of our college, as well as department chair. And Bob Shermer did everything else. He was the clinician's clinician. He taught all the lectures in medicine. He did, which now have become many subspecialties and specialties. He was our ophthalmologist, our neurologist, our cardiologist, our dermatologist, our endocrinologist, our internist, our geriatrician. He did it all. And he was my mentor the first couple of years. And Bob Shermer had an ego. He was a proud guy. And yet he saw the importance of specialization. And when he turned over areas to other people, in my case, cardiology, he said, "I want you to take it over." And to his credit, I believe, he never told me how to do it. He never told me I was doing it right. He never told me I was doing it wrong. It was my project, and he never kibitzed. And over the next probably 10 years, as our specialties developed, He turned these areas over, things that he had really started, to other individuals and stepped out of their way and never interfered with the development of these specialties. To this day, I'm amazed that this man could do this and did it so well and so graciously. The school was, as I say, small until we moved to the new facility in 1965. And the major strengths, of course, were the ambulatory service, which basically doesn't exist today. Like the University of Pennsylvania, where I graduated, the farm had become a less significant aspect of the profession, and ambulatory service became more difficult to operate. In the case of Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, it was too far to run. So I was astounded at the quality of the ambulatory service when I came out here. But as the southern Michigan became less and less a farming or cattle or hog or sheep production area, they like the University of Pennsylvania, ambulatory became a less influential aspect of the program until it's basically disappeared. Pathology was probably the premier program in the country and was extremely important to the college in the 1960s. Large animal changed dramatically, as did small animal. Primarily became an equine practice and equine surgery. And when I came here, there was no equine surgery being done, or at least no equine lameness being done, which today is a major aspect in our profession. The faculty, as I say, was small, and the thing that impressed me as much as anything else was the family attitude and the friendliness of the faculty. Faculty members, we played softball and on the weekends. We had teams against the students. We had leagues where we played against the students. In fall, it was football. In the summer, it was softball. And during the winter, it was water polo. But faculty would party together, and at the University of Pennsylvania, that didn't happen. I once commented to Jim Buchanan that one of the things I really enjoyed at Michigan State, and that those of us in the cardiology section, small though we were always friends. We had dinner at each other's homes, and we socialized. And he said, you know, I never had that. And I thought how sad that you could spend 40 years at an institution and not have that relationship with the people that you worked with on a daily basis. And at Michigan State, we talk about family. It's at the veterinary school, it's family.
George, you came from the East to the Midwest. Were there cultural things that you experienced that were challenges?
Oh, boy.
How did you deal with them?
Well, I came from a small town in Western Maryland, which is right at the foot of the Appalachian Mountains. So my high school had a graduating class of 16, so I was kind of accustomed to a small town. My wife was from Bethesda, Maryland, and we met at the University of Maryland. But I went at the East Coast is more formal, I was always a little uncomfortable in that kind of an environment. But at the University of Pennsylvania, it was cutthroat. It was dog eat dog. I'm convinced the faculty weren't really, well, they weren't friendly, and they weren't cooperative. They weren't helping each other, and it was an uncomfortable environment. I came out here, and all of a sudden, I felt like I was at home. And I used to say that I walked around for the first year with looking over my shoulder, afraid someone was going to stab me in the back like they would at the University of Pennsylvania. But it never happened. It took me almost a year, I guess, till I realized that there was no phoniness here.
George, you've talked about the college as being small when you arrived and how it's expanded. What do you see as the key factors that led to the growth and the prestige of CVM MSU over the years?
I think the first thing was the hospital moving from Gildner Hall to the new facility on the south campus, on the south side of the Red Cedar River, one of the first buildings over there. As I said, it was the finest facility in the country for a veterinary hospital. And we had several deans. Armstead first, I think, recognized that things were changing. The old guard was dying off, and a new attitude in the veterinary profession had come into being. And then Wally Keller, as the next dean, absolutely understood the importance of specialties. And my alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania, was probably the first school. Well, it was the first school to push specialization, but I believe Michigan State was second. And we got in, I think, on the ground floor on some of the specialization that today is the way the profession is headed and the way the profession is operating. And the development of specialties, particularly under the tutelage of Wally Keller, opened up our Michigan State as a leader in that area. The pathology had become a specialty. Then surgery, American College of Veterinary Surgeons, again with Wade Brinker as I think the second president of the college. And by the way, the Michigan State's leadership in American College of Veterinary Surgery continues to this day. For a long time, we had never had any of our residents fail the examination when the failure rate was 50%, and this went for some 10 or 15 years before anyone failed from Michigan State. It was an unbelievable record, and we still have a huge percentage of the colleges are Michigan State graduates or residents or interns that have gone through the program at Michigan State. The specialty of ophthalmology, which you were involved in the early development, and cardiology continue to be, along with orthopedics and surgery, specialties that are looked upon as some of the leaders in the profession.
With respect to those specialties, George, you built cardiology at MSU CVM. What were the challenges that you had along the way, and what were some of the successes, and what were your interactions with other folks across campus?
Oh, that's interesting. Certainly one of the reasons I've stayed at Michigan State is that I happened to be at the right place at the right time. experience I had at NIH as a summer person. And then the only other cardiology program in the country was at the University of Pennsylvania, where Jim Buchanan was starting to be interested in cardiac surgery. So when I got here, my master's project was to develop open heart surgery for veterinary medicine. And no one had done that. And Bob Shermer, although a medicine guy, encouraged this. And I got my master's, and we developed the first program to do cardiopulmonary bypass and open heart surgery in veterinary medicine. And we performed the first clinical open heart surgeries. I had the opportunity to pursue this. And I don't think that this could have happened anywhere else. First off, I don't think there would have been the leadership that saw the potential that allowed me to do that anywhere else. But perhaps even more important, open heart surgery was being developed around the country, and Ingham Medical Hospital was in the that had started as a tuberculosis hospital, had decided to become a cardiac center, and they were in the process of attempting to learn how to do open heart surgery at this same time. Art Stanley was the head of the hospital, and they started a dog lab and attempt to learn how to do these procedures. Now, in 1964, open heart surgery was 12 years old, but basically it hadn't really, the first procedure was done 12 years before that, but it hadn't really taken off until about 6 years prior to this time. And so there are only two places in the state of Michigan where open heart surgery was being done. I'm sorry, three, where open heart surgery was being done, and Lansing wanted to get into this game, and so it was an opportunity where we could work with the people from Ingham who were learning how to do this, and we could learn from them, and they could learn from us. We developed a program where we had students, first some faculty members and then students, 2 days a week in their dog lab at Ingham. And the fruits of that were Ingham Medical Center, a cardiac center of excellence in the United States, and the opportunity for us to develop the program at the veterinary school that was unique at the time and still is.
You had a strong relationship with Jim Buchanan, and I recall receiving a phone call from him when I was acting dean, in which he and his wife wanted to make a contribution to the new building program. Can you tell us about the relationship and about what happened after he sent that money to us?
Well, we have the Buchanan Room. Jim was an MSU graduate, as mentioned, and he went from MSU directed to the University of Pennsylvania was participant in a program they had there that was with the College of Human Medicine, the Graduate School of Medicine. It was kind of unique around the country, and they had about five veterinarians in a class of about 150. And each year, almost every year, the veterinarian was the top student in a class. And Jim Buchanan was the top student at the Graduate School of Medicine 1 year for a two-year program for a master's master's in medicine, I think it was. But Jim was from locally here, Jackson. And he had that Michigan attitude, and he's been extremely appreciative of his education here at MSU, and he wanted to give something back. And so when we were and Jim's a Renaissance man, he can do a little bit of everything. And when we were in the process of remodeling the then new clinic, a $50 million addition to a $6 million building, times change and costs go up. But we didn't have a really nice conference room. And Jim donated, Jim and his wife Marilyn donated the money for the Buchanan room, which was at the time the finest conference room on the campus. And we could invite guests in and not be embarrassed with the facility. And we established the Buchanan Lecture, which was the first named lecture in the college in his name.
George, you were here 46 years as a faculty member?
44.
44. During that time, you worked with and served under several deans. Would you want to share some of your experiences with those deans?
Oh, yeah, interesting guys. The first dean that I worked under was W.W. Armstead. Probably this is a history talk, so the person I can best describe him as was General Douglas MacArthur. Armstead was a military guy. He was ramrod straight, very, very professional, and probably the best speaker that I have ever heard. He could talk on anything. Sometimes he didn't know what he was talking about, but it sounded really good. And it was actually very well referenced, and he wouldn't make a mistake, but he could talk on area on subjects that he didn't know anything about 2 months before. And like Douglas MacArthur, he's the epitome of excellent guy on a podium. And he was instrumental in bringing the College of Human Medicine to this campus. I think he saw that as an opportunity to improve the basic science levels at Michigan State University. And for years, the departments of microbiology, pathology, physiology, pharmacology, and toxicology were jointly served in that with the medical school, and I think it was successful in the sense that it did infuse new blood and a wider background in the basic sciences. He went on to found the veterinary school at the University of Tennessee. He was followed by Charlie Reed, who was an associate dean under his when Armstead was dean. And Charlie Reed was a good guy. He was more than a caretaker, but he he kept things going, and the college improved, but the individual that followed him was John Welzer, who was, I called him the boy dean. He was relatively young. He was dynamic. He would do anything bordering on illegal for the College of Veterinary Medicine, and maybe even cross the border. He was here at a time of change, and he was certainly influential in the development of specialties. He started that and pushed that, and he put up with a lot of stuff that for me that certainly some deans would have never allowed me to get away with. So I really appreciate that. And his associate dean, Jack Judy, who ran the hospital at the time, was also instrumental in these specialty developments. A story about Welser. He and Dean Weston and Dean Megan of human medicine and osteopathic medicine, I called them the Three Musketeers. Welser understood the importance of the schools working together, and they did. They helped each other and academically and financially. President of the university was interim, and I can't think of his name. He was big with Oldsmobile.
Was that Ed Hardin?
Hardin, yeah, Ed Hardin, who had been a mentor for Welser, was upset that the medical deans were lobbying downtown, and they were getting big time support. Basically bypassing the university administration. And so Hardin invited them to his office for a little time at the woodshed. And Don Howard went along with the dean. He was an associate dean. And so they go into Hardin's office, and Hardin lays the law down on them. You're not going to be interacting with the legislators. Everything is, financials are coming through this office. And they, And as they leave, Welser gets in his old Volkswagen Beetle that he drove, most undeanship, undeanments that he could have. And instead of heading east toward the vet school, he's heading west. And Don said, "Where are we going?" He said, "Oh, I got to meet with Senator so-and-so." So they Hardin's lecture didn't last very long. But Welser got us the addition, the $50 million addition to the $6 million building. And that allowed for additional growth and, again, the specialties. Welser would do anything for the college. He was dean during a period of time when there was a lot of student activity, and his answer to any student protest was beer and pizza. And if the students were a little upset about something, he'd throw a beer and pizza party, and that was the end of the student unrest. Can't do that today. But it worked, and the college grew, and then Wally Keller became dean, and Wally was to have been a caretaker, but he wasn't, and he was extremely active in developing and continuing the development of the specialties and the programs, and he was so good at it that he was interim dean again after the next dean, Jack Tasker. Jack Tasker was the example of the pendulum effect. He was everything Welser wasn't. He was much more formal. I personally had a very difficult time getting along with him. He withdrew. Relationships with the medical schools and the relationships with agriculture that Welser had so worked so hard to establish were dropped under Welser's tour. And actually, I think the college fell significantly in its national esteem as well as the situation here on campus. But then after another period at, with Wally Keller as acting dean, another growth period. We got Lonnie King, who I think was one of the most unique people that ever led a veterinary school. Lonnie King had been chief of APHIS, which is a big branch of the USDA. He came here with Washington, D.C. kind of attitude. He knew how to get things done at the at a level that was way above the typical state level. He was a national mover and a shaker, and he was an innovative guy with tremendous vision, and I think was probably the finest dean on this campus of any school, and certainly the finest dean in veterinary medicine at the time. And he opened up paths for this college at the national level and worldwide. So I've seen a variety of deans and not one with a similar personality or approach to any of the others.
In your work in small animal, you assumed the role of acting chair of the small animal clinical science department at a critical time. Can you share with us what that was like?
Oh, that was something else. Bob Shermer had suffered a brain hemorrhage in his office, and I was the faculty member who was chair of the advisory council, which was the only other office that we had in the department. And so I was automatically the kind of had to fill in. Well, it was supposed to be a 1 or 2 month deal, and it became 2.5 years. And it just happened to be at the time of R-Cube, which was the retrenchment or revise or whatever the R's were. But what it meant is reduction in finances. And hard to believe, but the small animal department had an operating budget of $50,000 at that time, of which $25,000 went to buying dogs for the student surgery lab. So we had $25,000 for buying pencils and travel and paper, and this was ridiculous. And so we went about the process of establishing laboratory fees, and we worked with Jack Judy in developing a payback from hospital income for the department, and that salvaged us in a time when the university funds were becoming less. Percentage of the hospital income is about $2 million a year that allows the department to do some of the things that really needed to be done.
You mentioned Jack Judy as associate dean and as director of the teaching hospital. I think you and I had the privilege of serving on a building committee, which he chaired. You recall any special events about those experiences?
Jack Judy is an interesting guy. He was Welser's associate dean, henchman, and he did all the dirty work for Welser. But he was really, really smart, and he was really talented. And Welser connived the money for the hospital, you and I were fortunate enough to be on a committee that were the building committee, and Jack Judy was head of that committee and the liaison between the university and the architects. And Jack understood architecture and building plans, and he had gone through this, I think, at Purdue. We worked with those architects, and we built a hospital that had the fewest change orders, came in under budget. Nothing like that had happened here before. And it was because of Jack Judy. And the relationship with the architects was great, and that was because of Jack Judy. And after that building was completed, the university asked him to take over the same job for the plant science, or I think it was not, no, toxicology building. And he did that, and that came in under budget. And then they asked him to take over that job for the new science building. And so Jack Judy became kind of the university's liaison between the school and architects in three giant building projects. And I think all of them came in under budget.
He was a fun guy to work with, and that was a good time. George, you've taught nearly 5,000 students during your time at MSU, maybe more. There must have been some interesting characters and some favorites. Any comments you want to make on that?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, in 44 years, that's not half of the time at MSU Veterinary School, which is now just over 100 years old, 101 years. Mm-hmm. But the first classes were 3 and 5 and maybe 10 students, and the last ones are over 100. So, in fact, I think I've taught about 80%, maybe a little more than that, of all the veterinary students. And, yeah, there's some really interesting people. Interesting classes. You and I have talked about how we feel that the students with a broad undergraduate background are the superior students, and I think they are. They're more mature and more knowledgeable, worldly. The students that I remember best were the students in our so-called heart team, that were the 10 students a year that spent those 2 days or two mornings a week for 10 weeks at the lab at Ingham Hospital, and then worked in my lab on Thursday nights till midnight. We got a close relationship, and I got to know these kids really well. There are several that's in that group that stand out. Of those students, several have become deans of veterinary schools. Some have become department chairs. They were a select group of students. Stan Connival, the surgery lab tech, was the first cut. He would tell me of the students that applied for the position if they had surgical skills, and they had to be bright. And then we interviewed them, and we got the team. So they have all evolved if they didn't stay in academia or elsewhere, into practitioners that were not afraid of doing heart surgery or chest surgery at a time when it was not being done in veterinary medicine. And so they're successful practitioners and surgeons. And of the nearly 200 that went through that program, four elected to leave veterinary profession and go into the human profession, medicine. All in surgery. And of those four, one's in ophthalmology surgery, and one's in thoracic surgery, And one of them, Jim Buck, went to Hopkins and stayed there and became head of pediatric surgery at Johns Hopkins. And John Weigeld became involved in emergency room surgery and became the surgeon on call for the President of the United States. Whenever the president leaves the country, an emergency room surgeon travels with him. And for George Bush the First, John Weigeld was that surgeon. So it was a unique experience for those students as well as this unique experience for us. And no one ever had that kind of surgical training in veterinary or human medicine before or since. And so these guys, the four that went into medical school, were so far ahead of everyone else in their schools that they just excelled excelled in their profession.
So in retrospect, Dr. Eister, what would you say were the most significant changes that you saw here at CVM-MSU over the past five decades?
Well, I think there's no question that the significant changes were the development of the specialties. When I started in the veterinary profession, I think the biggest significant thing that had happened to veterinary medicine up until that time was the development of antibiotics, and since then the profession has changed so dramatically with the development of specialties and the specialty boards and the switch from basically an agricultural support for a large animal to a pet practice and research. And that was all because of the specialization and specialty training that our veterinary students, but more the resident interns and residents get today. A second major change, I think, and you're much more familiar with that than I am, is the way the education of veterinarians has changed. We spent hours and hours in labs and memorizing material when I was a veterinary student, and there wasn't that much to learn, so we could memorize it all. But that's not the case today. The enormity of the information that's available has forced us to change the way we teach from a rote approach to a problem-solving approach.
If a young new faculty member would come to you and ask you about guidance or advice as a new faculty member, what kind of things would you share with them?
Oh, boy. Well, you're going to have to you're going to have to sacrifice. I think there's a tendency today for students not to be willing to give up some of the things that they like to do. Like maybe your family's going to have to suffer a little bit. You're going to have to put it, you, it, it's not, if you're going to be a successful academician today, you're not going to be putting in a 40-hour week. You're going to be spending time on weekends, and you're going to be spending a lot of time at night. You're going to have to be willing to focus on an area. Again, that's the specialty thing, whereas everyone was generalist 50 years ago. That doesn't hack it anymore. And that means additional training in a much more focused area. If you want to be successful in academia, you probably have to do some research. And that's becoming more and more apparent. The universities are forcing that. And that means advanced training in research, not necessarily an advanced degree, but advanced training that would be similar to advanced degree training. And I guess you're, the other thing is, I was going to say, you're just going to have to work really hard. There are an awful lot of really bright people in our profession that are going to be your competition, and you better be prepared.
So 46 years at MSU, and what does a green and white mean to you? What does it mean for you to be a Spartan?
You know, that's I bleed green. I mean, my wife and I went to the 1979 NCAA basketball finals in Salt Lake City. And in the first game, Michigan State played the University of Pennsylvania. And I've been to four Final Fours, and that was by far the best. While the first game was being played in the semifinals, the Pennsylvania people and the Michigan State people were outside and didn't go in until about halftime of the first game when Indiana State was playing DePaul. And it was great. The fans were razzing each other, and the Penn band played Hail to the Victors, the ultimate insult. And we were talking to some Penn people, and they said, I'll bet you don't even know where the University of Pennsylvania is. And I said, I'm a graduate of it. And they, what are you wearing green for? And I said, because I'm at the right place. As I mentioned, Pennsylvania, I'm glad I was there. I'm glad I'm not there now. I came to the Midwest. I love the Midwest. I love the Midwest attitude, and I love Michigan State. No place else would people have put up with me, would allow me to do the things that I've been able to do. I've been fortunate to be here under great leadership, really people with vision that saw the future of the profession and were willing to take a chance on somebody that was a little different and do the things that I wanted to do. I'm privileged to have been here, and I really appreciate the opportunity of having been here.
So now you're retired. What are you doing in retirement to keep active? And I know you are.
Well, my wife and I are pilots. We fly around. We have an airstrip at our farm. I farm a little bit. I don't farm like you do. I just raise a little alfalfa every year. I'm working with a couple of other retirees, and we just got done restoring a schoolhouse for the museum for the township, and we've got some real estate, and I enjoy building and construction, and so I've been able to stay reasonably busy. And and the last year, for the first time since I've not been working full time, we were able to take advantage of a home we have in the Caribbean, and I'm planning on spending, as I did last year, about 3 months in the Caribbean.
Well, George, thank you for the time and the thoughts that you shared with us. I want to add one thing. My personal thanks to you for serving as a mentor and as a guide when I first arrived at MSU. You may not recall this, but on one lunch hour, you took me on a ride in an old blue Chevy station wagon to show me the surrounding areas of Greater Lansing and a place where I might want to live. But in addition, you pointed out things that were happening, things that could help me, and I appreciated that very much.
Well, thank you, and it's been a privilege to add perhaps to the history of the veterinary school. And as I say, it's certainly been a privilege for me to be here.